Okay. Right. Oh, yeah. Where were we? Yes. Foucault, right? Yes. Yes, we got... Well, we should be, if we're lucky, we might finish on Thursday, but we probably won't. We'll probably go on to Tuesday. If I know me, if I know you. And I'm delighted to see that Living Theory blog committee is very active, and we have a wonderful blog. I do recommend that you go to the Monty Python exhibit on sovereign power. How many people have heard that 3 minutes? That is probably the funniest thing on that whole blog. It's to be found out just in your section, I think.
Yeah.
Is that right, Aaron? Where is Aaron? Aaron, you're always here. There you are. So if you can. All right, fine, very good. Anyway, so keep it up. Very good. All sorts of interesting pictures there too. Right, Wafa?
Yeah.
Yes, very good. Very good. And I, you know, who knows, I may make an appearance too. Yeah. I'm already there, I think, already. You've got the Foucauldian experience of being taught. God, look at that haircut. Ah. We have, stand up, please, stand up. Last, that's really beautiful. No, stand up again. Last, stand up, stand up. Let us all, everybody, see what Foucault looked like when he was 22.
Just as your haircut.
Last, I could never develop something here. I could only paint it. Yes. And believe me, I didn't have a haircut like that when I was your age. I was fully clothed. Okay. Yes, okay. Very good. All right. Very good. Are there any questions about Foucault? So, all right. So, you're going to get bored of this comparison with Durkheim, but I'm still going to insist upon it, even in my summary. But before, look, for next time, you should have read this pages 23 to 24 at least 5 times. Keep on reading. It's only 2 pages, but that is the 4 elements of disciplinary power. You should be, every time you read it, you should understand it better by virtue of the fact that you have been reading other parts of the book. And then we will get to the very end of the book. We'll ask, what is a disciplinary society? And we will compare it with, of course, Durkheim's understanding of division of labor and organic solidarity. And then we'll get on to the fun part, of course, what's all fun, comparing Foucault, Marx, and Gramsci. Comparing Foucault, Marx, and Gramsci. And, of course, Foucault has a lot to say to Marx and Gramsci, as he does to all social theorists, particularly classical sociology. Right. All right. So, summary. Ha-ha. Yes. Okie dokie. All right. This is the picture for today. This is Lars being punished for not controlling his hair properly. Yeah. Okay, at the top, sovereign power. Sovereign power. That's Foucault. This, the execution of Damien, the execution of anybody, public. This idea of sovereign power is one in which one dramatically invokes what he calls what? Punishment of visible intensity, which is a manifestation of what he calls ascending individualism. But who is the individual? It is the sovereign. The sovereign whose power, in a sense, is being contested. The sovereign is the individual. The dominant class in Marxian terms are made up of individuals in this era of sovereign power, which, of course, well, Foucault's doesn't define exactly when this period is, but he's talking about 16th, 17th century, I would say. Perhaps to some extent already in the 18th century. And then it's based on repression. This is sovereign power. gazing up at the sovereign, like you gazing up at me. I am the sovereign here. In disciplinary power, there will be no sovereign. There will be just a video that will show you talking to one another. Yeah, you wait. Treat in store. Well, you're kids anyhow. Okay, right. As opposed to Durkheim, mechanical solidarity. Same phenomenon, execution. But here, what's at stake is the collective consciousness, the repairing of the collective consciousness, and the punishment of the criminal. But the punishment is to repair the collective consciousness, to build that mechanical solidarity. Same phenomenon, completely different interpretation. For Foucault, this sovereign power gives rise to, ultimately, to disciplinary power. And I've had endless discussions, arguments with your GSIs as to how one goes from sovereign power to disciplinary power. I claim there is no real theory in Foucault of this transition. What this disciplinary power ultimately corresponds to, I think, is in fact the rise of capitalism, the rise of the division of labor, capitalist division of labor. But anyway, he, I don't think, has a theory of transition of why you necessarily go from A to B. Well, what is this disciplinary power? It's basically this disciplinary power is diffused throughout the institutions of society. And there, in all those institutions, we have regimes of micro-penalties. And we have a descending individualism. Now the focus is not on the sovereign. The sovereign disappears, and the focus is on the individuals who are subject to power, who are subjugated. Descending individualism. Individualism. Yes. And here the idea is to rehabilitate those individuals that go astray. Rehabilitation, correct training, inculcating the correct behavior that is part of disciplinary power. As opposed to Durkheim, who definitely thinks that mechanical solidarity will necessarily give rise to organic solidarity. There's an evolutionary sequence, a necessary evolutionary sequence, it seems, and associated with, instead of micro-penalties, he has localized consciousnesses in these institutions of society that keep those institutions together, make them coherent. He talks about, you remember, the cult of the individual as opposed to this descending individualism, the cult of the individual, the focus on the individual. The idea of respect for recognition of individuality. Yes, and finally the point is not to rehabilitate the individual, but to restore, restitution, the restoration of social relations. Not rehabilitate individual, but restoration of social relations. Yes. And all, of course, all of this, I'm afraid, is over here. It's the division of labor. This disciplinary power is necessary for the division of labor. This focus on the on the individual. You have to constitute, the forge the individual, so that they will occupy places in the division of labor and occupy them in a way that they carry out, act out the logic of the division of labor. And for Durkheim, this division of labor will, of course, involves relations of interdependence and will lead to solidarity. So what Foucault is saying is that the division of labor that Durkheim so adores, so celebrates, that Durkheim produces organic solidarity, itself requires the forging of individuals, the constitution of those individuals. They don't come naturally and spontaneously. They have to be created. Yeah. Yeah. But you see, what is really profoundly different about these two theorists is where one talks about power, the other talks about solidarity. For Durkheim, the division of labor is the realization of our abilities and talents, natural abilities and talents, whereas Foucault, it is the constitution forging and slotting people into places. It's always a forced division of labour as opposed to a spontaneous division of labour. Okay, any questions on that? Greg. Yeah. Ascending individuality is when one looks at the individual up. One looks up to the individual. One looks up to the execution of Damien, whose execution represents the intensity of sovereign power. Whereas descending individuals, they're looking down on individuals, constituting individuals. I constitute you as individuals. This room is made, in effect, for me to look down upon you. As well as, of course, it turns out for you to look at. So it's a two. It's both ascending and descending individuality here, I suppose. But the ultimate disciplinary power is actually in which the observer is invisible, which we'll come to. That is ultimately the panopticon. But basically, it is those who are dominated that are constituted as individuals. Cases, files, having IDs, taking exams and being graded. The focus is on the descending individual. On descending individual, what Foucault calls descending individuality. Is that? Yeah? Any other questions? Yes, Jessica. Sorry, you don't get it. Well, tell me that you don't get it at the end of today.
Wait, just repeat what you said.
Ah, descending individual. Good Lord, Chelsea's back. Hi. There's a descending individual. I'm going to constitute her as a separate, differentiated individual. Yeah, now, descending individual is when the focus is on the individuality of those who are subjugated, who are subordinate. So it is the constitution of workers in the workplace as individual workers, watched and surveilled. It is the patient in the hospital who's being put in a bed and watched, separated and surveilled and examined. It is the student who in the classroom is being watched, surveilled and monitored. Okay. As opposed to the mass, under sovereign power, we have a mass of individuals who are gazing up at the sovereign, a mass of undifferentiated individuals. They're not really individuals anymore, like Durkheim. The individual is the sovereign, gazing up as opposed to gazing down. No? Yes? Are we getting there, Jessica?
Yeah. So does that have to do with where the focus is on?
Yeah. The gaze is up or the gaze is down. I mean, the gaze is up and the gaze is down. In a sense, this is interesting. This room is both ways. The gaze is up and the gaze is down. It's a matter of which wins. Yes, right. Yes, sir. Jason, do you have your hand up? Who's more sympathetic?
Observers.
Well, no, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I don't think that Foucault has much to say about that. Except, of course, I've made a big deal of what he says on page 9, that you know there are times when somebody is executed publicly that leads to the identification of the people watching the execution with the executed. But that is not assumed to be always the case. Most usually it is the case under this public execution is that it creates terror, strikes terror into the soul of the observers. Yes. So it's not as you might say it's identification. I don't think that's, and certainly not the words that Foucault would use. Yes, Simeon.
When you drew the disciplinary power last week, you had this state with like, this area that the state is monitoring, or power, okay, that's monitoring this, what's below it, right? It's able to see everything. And you drew it, like, cross-hatched. You drew it, like, all sectioned up. And I'm wondering if that sectioning is supposed to be, like, a spontaneous thing, like...
I don't know what you're talking about, I'm sorry.
I have a picture of it.
You do? Interesting. This is supposed to be disciplinary power, huh? Yes, why did I put those crosses there? I suppose that was because the people were being constituted as differentiated. Yes. Yes, Lauren. No, it's nothing to do with that. It's the way whether power is executed by a visible entity up there over a mass, or whether it's organized through the subjugation of individuals who are being watched. Who is being watched in the situation of sovereign power? The execution is being watched. Who is being watched in the disciplinary power? Is the individuals being subjugated, as we all see endlessly today. It is the individuals who are observed, normalized, and examined. This is a very, very important point. Because the essence of Foucault, in a sense, the difference between sovereign power and disciplinary power. And I'm suggesting it is analogous to the distinction that Durkheim makes between mechanical and organic solidarity. So, do you want me to pursue this, Simeon, or do you want to come and see me in my office hours? Yeah, because I'd have to go and look at my notes, but one of those spontaneous drawings. But I suspect if it's to do with disciplinary power, it's to do with the idea that people are differentiated, separated.
Yeah, he talks about the military parade and automatically order themselves.
The ordering, yes.
There's lines on the ground.
And when we get to the plague later today, that's what the plague is going to be all about. Segmenting, separating. So that's what is implied in that picture. Okay, oh, yes, you better be quick, Matthew.
Oh, I guess one thing that helps me think about it is how under sovereign power, the leaders would have portraits painted of themselves, but the mass,
Very good. Yeah, I mean, in sovereign power, one thinks of who the leaders are. They are the ones that sort of celebrated, the heroes of history, those great individuals. If you go to places like Soviet Union, it's a bit late now, but nevertheless, if you were to, historically, or China, you would see the ways in which leaders are actually constituted as entities up there. But everybody's gazing up in Tiananmen Square. Oh, the Red Square, Yes. But there's also a lot of disciplinary power in that societies too, you see. Yeah, though they are combined, which is the whole point of the panopticon, where we'll get to that in a second. Okay, very good, very good, very good. Disciplinary power, first of all, we talked about hierarchical observation, which we've just been talking about how first aspect, a moment of disciplinary power is the idea of people being observed. Hierarchical observation, surveillance is all over the place. We are all being surveilled all the time. Yes. That's the claim, anyhow. And second, normalization. Well, the point is, there's not much point in observing people unless you're going to observe them with respect to ensuring that they conform to some norm, some rule. That's the point of the observation. That's the point of the observation. And he has five moments of normalization. First moment is that basically there exist in many institutions, he would say perhaps in all micro-institutions, schools, hospitals, prisons, military camps, there exist what he calls small penal mechanisms to extract conformity. Conformity in this class, that you appear on time, you don't leave halfway through. You don't chew your gum too loudly. Yes, but I can't stop you looking at Facebook.
I don't do Facebook.
You see, immediately, internalize it, immediately feel she's been accused. I didn't even mention her name, Sonny, right? So that's the power of observation and normalization. You have all fear of being observed. Anyway, so these micro penalties that extract conformity. Then second point is evaluating failure. That basically the point of normalization is to evaluate people's failure to actually perform according to the rule, according to the norm. Yes. Yes. And then third, punishment as corrective. The point is, punishment is not an expiation, it's not a revenge. Punishment for Foucault is a form of training, a form of corrective. How were you punished when you were in high school? Anybody ever punished in high school? Felipe, you must have been punished. Never! Oh! You are the perfect Foucauldian subject, the docile body. Never punished. You never deviated from anything.
Just never got caught.
That may be true, but no,
has anybody ever been punished here? Ah, the Norwegian punishment. Let's hear it, lass. How? What happened to you?
I got kicked out.
Sorry?
Kicked out.
Expelled. Wow, that's pretty impressive. You're going to make a great sociologist. Ah, yes, expelled. Very good. What did you do?
I